Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. And today we have a special guest. Let me introduce you to everybody here today. We got a full crew. Chad Ashley's here, as always. How you doing, Chad?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Wonderful. And Chris Schmidt is here, rocking it. Got the nice lighting back behind you, looking good. How you doing, Chris?
Shifted over to orange for our theme today, I think.
Ooh, for our special guest, which I should introduce right now. Our special guest is John Bosley. He's a 3D freelancer. Thank you, John, so much for coming on the Grayscale Gorilla podcast. How you been?
Thanks for having me. Been really good.
It's looking good for those, you know, the lights. I know we're going to talk about some X particle stuff since you do a lot of that. And we also have the color theme from Chris is also kind of working with your hair too today a little.
That's not what I thought he meant.
for those of you, you'll just have to go back on YouTube. John, thanks so much for joining us. We're here talking about all this crazy stuff. We figured we bring John on for a couple reasons. We are really excited to release your training over on Grayscale Gorilla. That's going to come out. We'll talk about that later today. It's going to be some X particles training. But in general, we just like hearing stories of how people get into this industry. We like hearing, you know, what's worked for other people. And, you know, honestly, we've been talking, all the three of us on the podcast, for the last few months nonstop. So I figured let's get somebody fresh in, let's learn a new story, and let's kind of figure out how you got into this crazy world. And also, what's the story? I don't even know. What's the John Bosley story? How did you get into 3D, Cinema 4D, and eventually into particles and X particles?
Okay, that's a big question.
I hit him with a big one right away.
Softball, yeah.
No, nothing about the weather.
Questions.
Nothing about the weather. Nothing about your awesome accent. Those, we're gonna save those jokes for later. We're gonna get to know John. Boom.
Okay. So, it's a pretty long story as usual, but I'll try sort of keep it short as possible. But I got into 3D by accident, like a lot of people do. I played games as a kid in the late 90s. I was playing like Unreal Tournament, and I got into the level editing stuff.
Oh,
and
that's
where I started. I've really done very little of that since, because not long after that, I got a free copy of C4D on the front of a magazine. I think it was like 6SE or something like this. It was like a proper free on the front of a magazine. And then I was hooked. I literally spent all my time just messing around in C4D. I say that most of my free time, my hobby time. And this is when I was still at school. So I wasn't doing any work with it. I was just sort of exploring, creating things. And I'm not from a particularly artistic background, but technically, you know, just building stuff. I loved Legos as a kid, so it's kind of, you know.
John's my new favorite person now. You're speaking my language all the way down the line here.
Yeah. I guess I'm second.
Yeah, cool. And then from that point, it was sort of it did influence a little bit my choices, because at school, obviously, you have to make, or I guess at high school at this point, I'd have to make choices about like future jobs and qualifications and stuff. So I did, I actually did all the sciences because I thought I was going to be a vet.
Whoa, I did not know that. That's really interesting.
So I, this is when they make you choose when you're like 15, 16. And I was just like, I would grow up on a farm. I like animals. I'll be a vet. And that didn't pan out because I'm so bad at chemistry, like so bad. but beyond that, so this is obviously going on too long already. But
no, this is fascinating. I like these side bits. Yeah. This is good.
Okay, so then after that point, I had to. So that was like you have four major subjects in the UK. It's like A levels, and I did okay, not great. But then at the point where you choose to go to university, you have to choose one and you have to choose a subject. Basically, and I was not going to be a vet. I didn't feel it. the subjects were not good, so I actually chose architecture because it we did like these survey things, which kind of put you in these categories and stuff. And one of them, it was like a fringe category on my stuff, and it was architecture. And it kind of was like I started to look into it, and I saw they did 3D stuff and design, and I loved that kind of thing. So I studied architecture at uni. Basically, wow. I went to Portsmouth.
That's really
uni.
Cool.
Yeah, I went to Portsmouth Uni for 3 years. Did a degree there where it was you do tech. You should, what normally people do is they do three parts. you do a part one, two, and three. It's a degree, diploma, and master's. I just did the degree part, got to the end of it, and I was like, do I want to carry on doing this? I enjoy it, but I mostly enjoyed the visualization side. In fact, most of my uni was spent drinking and visualizing other people's projects. So in C4D, by the way. So I had a student version of C4D back then, and I basically just, yeah, I spent all my time messing around in it, doing nothing related to architecture, and just taught myself on the side. So and then after uni, I got a job visualizing in architecture because I didn't want to carry on doing the main course sort of thing. And that went really well. I got hired for a 2-week job and ended up there for 3 years. So that was kind of lucky.
Super lucky. Stint.
Yeah, it was a good stint. And then I kind of started doing stuff on the sort of freelance side of things, like in my spare time with a friend, where we literally just did crappy short films. They were crappy. Like really, really funny little sort of 24-hour film challenges, that kind of stuff. And I do little bits of 3D for that. And that's where I really started to use C4D as an animation tool. I'd done like fly-throughs and stuff, but I'd actually never touched it for like all the cool effect stuff and motion graphics stuff. So I feel a bit of an imposter when I think I've been doing this long enough now since that point that I've kind of transitioned across, but it always felt like I'd heard of After Effects, but I'd never used After Effects until that point, until about 10 years ago. And then once that was done, I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. The work picked up and I ended up getting lucky, and me and my friend went off and did a little venture for about 4 or 5 years. And then we just naturally, it was completely amicable, kind of work less with each other. It was a partnership rather than a studio or a company or anything like that. So, and yeah, I'm still doing sort of some visualization work, some sort of online ads, lots of stuff. Yeah, lots
that
of
was, that was going to be my next question is like, so when you transitioned into, you know, from doing architectural visualization type work and you started to work with your partner more, mm-hmm. What sort of work was the catalyst for doing that? Were you getting a lot more motion design work as you started to learn After Effects and that sort of thing?
So it was kind of a bit of a, so I got into some sort of projects, like I said, those short films, and they would contain titles or they'd contain some sort of motion graphics element that would kind of, I could show people that, you know, it's sort of a real thing, you know. So we had a reel that we'd show people, and that kept building up. So each project we'd add a new thing to it, and so it's pretty organic how that all happened. But the one thing that really got me interested into the animation side of things was actually TFD. It was actually the fluid sim, because it was very new around 2000. I can't remember when this was, but oh no, maybe it was a bit later. Actually, it might have been the motion graphics or the dynamics tools that really got me into it. But yeah, I'm trying to remember which way around that was. But TFD, I did an effects shot, and then I had it kind of fit in with like a flag, and it blew through the flag. It was pretty bad, but it was really satisfying, the problem solving and stuff, mm-hmm. which I hadn't really come across in the same way with the architectural stuff. The architectural stuff, you'd build a model or you'd get a CAD model. You just put materials on it. You get a load of stock people, stock furniture, stock all that stuff, and then you just render it. You don't actually animate much. So
for those that don't know what TFD is, tell them what that is.
So Turbulence FD is a fluid sim. So it's a fluid sim plugin for C4D. It's fantastic. It's one focused product. It does one thing and it does it incredibly well. Runs on GPU, so that's it's nice and fast. Development's been a bit slow, so I kind of haven't touched it for too long. But it was like my introduction to plugins, actually, because I hardly ever used plugins before that point, apart from V-Ray. I hadn't touched plugins because I wanted to learn the core app.
Except for all of our plugins, right?
Oh, ever since, yeah, of course. Sorry,
you have all those. Assumed.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and so we met John at I want to say, was it NAB? Were you at NAB last year? Was it? Yeah,
it was this year. It was NAB this year.
This year, so we met through Insidium and X Particles, and mm-hmm. that's when I first saw your work. Was all the not only X Particles work you were doing, but also the training you were doing. Like you were at the booth showing people, and like, well, who's this guy? He's got awesome accent. He's got, he's a good teacher and he's good at what he does. Like that doesn't come around too often. So how did you get into X Particles and kind of go down that rabbit hole? Because that, I remember when I first saw X Particles, it was like, like you mentioned Dynamics. You mentioned Cinema 4D Dynamics. I had that same kind of feeling when I first saw X Particles. So how did you get into this world?
So that was pretty similar to the TFT thing. I actually had done some particle stuff with Thinking Particles, but only just scraped the surface, you know, use the presets. And at the time, it just seemed so overwhelmingly complicated for me. And I knew it was a job came up and we needed sparks, I think it was. It was like a cable breaking and then sparks coming out of it. Simple thing to do, even with Thinking Particles. But X Particles launched, I think it was like version 1.something. So it was really early on. And then I got that and then I was like, oh, okay, I don't need to really learn Thinking Particles now, because that was getting a bit old at the time. And this way of working feels way more sort of Cinema 4D to me. You know, it's using the object manager. It was super organized and just instant results, satisfying, instant kind of very sort of creatively satisfying. But and then from that point, I just kept doing little tests online. I kept doing little sort of experiments, putting them on Vimeo. And then I started to chat to Mike at Insidium, who's one of the guys, basically Mike the guy Batchelor. Who came up with the idea. Yeah, Mike Batchelor, yeah. He's a great guy, we're good friends. And so we just got chatting, he got me on the beta, and then beta.
I love that. That's what I love about working with John. I've been working with him for a while on this training, and every time we talk, I'm always like, oh, that's such an interesting way of saying that word.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but like it's just one of those things. Every time I hear you say something like that, I just gotta like be like, "What? Say it again. I want to hear that again."
No, you're right though, because at each time I do that, sometimes I actually say it in the American way because I'm hearing it mostly spoken by Americans, because of a lot of the training is out there is Americans. It's like Europeans learning English. A lot of them have an American accent because the best training is in with American guides, or you know. And so it's quite funny. You'll hear me slip every so often, and you'll realize I'm actually secretly American. But
that's what I was waiting for. Sorry, I didn't mean, you got on the beta, and so
I got on the beta, and I'm still on it now. Can't talk about it, obviously, but I love it. I think because it's very fundamental. Like playing with particles feels very like playing with the universe, playing with your own world, or you know that kind of thing. And it just kept getting better and better as well. So each time there'd be something new, I'd be like, "Oh wow, this is kind of filling a huge gap that I felt was in C4D at the time," because Thinking Particles was just a bit too obscure for quite a few people.
Whereas X Particles obliterated Thinking Particles.
It did. I was being polite, but you're absolutely right. It did.
Every time I would for a long time super defend Thinking Particles, and then it got to a point where I hadn't used them in a while, and I had to just make a basic emitter to follow this null around. It's like, this is so difficult.
Yes. It's still valid, because if you have loads of setups that were built in that, and you know, there is something to a nodal workflow. I still love nodal workflows, so you know, but you're right. Basically, what you could do with one, even just one emitter object in X Particles took a while to kind of build up in Thinking Particles. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I started learning Cinema, I came from, you know, Maya and 3ds Max, where particle systems were kind of like built in. And so for the longest time, I had no idea X Particles was even a plugin. Like I thought that was the particle system, because I just didn't know any better. And of course, you know, GSG, they, you know, covered a lot of it and talked a lot about it and had it on our website and stuff. So before I started, I was always like, oh, X Particles, that's just like their particle, right? And then it wasn't until after I kind of got into it a little bit more that I realized that it was a plugin. And then I realized that Thinking Particles was a part of Cinema, but then that was totally different from me too, because Thinking Particles was completely different in 3ds Max, because in 3ds Max, Cebus still runs it, and it's like super powerful, used on feature films. So it was confusing for me, but I gotta say, like X Particles is probably one of those plugins that I think everybody already has. If they haven't, they they should get it, because it's one of those things that you always.
If they don't already have it, they're meeting to get it. Literally, every person who doesn't have it is like, oh yeah, I'm going to get that one of these days.
It's because it's needed, man. You need it.
Well, and it feels what I liked about it was, unlike a lot of other plugins, it felt like a part of Cinema. I think that's why you said what you said too, Chad. It's like, oh, it's just a part of Cinema. It has the same structure. It has this really like Lego piece, fundamental, like you said, John, feel to it. And when you start playing with it in that way, you're like, oh, this is like MoGraph and modifiers, but times thousands and thousands and millions rather than a few thousand particles, you know? So that to me was what pulled me in. So if through your like learning X particles too, John, like you've been playing with X particles for a while. Like what keeps you like learning? They got new versions coming out. Like, I know you're working with them.
I am, yeah.
You know, on and off too.
Yeah.
What keeps you in the, playing with this stuff?
There's always something that I haven't discovered. So there's always something. And then they'll add, so it's a constant, because they are really great. They're probably, I mean, I'm completely biased here because I'm friends with these guys. So I just love the way they go about development. They don't just, go, okay, here's one big feature, and let's just push that to the next update, and then let that be the one thing that they do. They just go on a sort of a massive tree of interesting little investigations, and then they come back with the best ones, and you end up, I can't talk about the next version, but say I was going back to 3.5, when that was getting those versions of stuff put in, every time they do a little update, it was huge. It was something like, oh my God, how did we not have this before? Or this is going to save me a lot of time, and that's what, so even when I fully feel like I've learned one thing pretty much fully, there's always something else that jumps up. And it's not just the something else, it's the combination stuff. So when they add a new modifier, you start combining it with the existing modifiers, and you end up with like this infinite number of possibilities, which can be a bit overwhelming, but at the same time, it's fun to play with. Like you come up with some really interesting stuff. So.
Yeah, that's how I see it too. It's fun. Like, that's why X Particles stood out to me, and why when we saw it too, you know, we started seeing it pop up in people's like presentations and demos, tutorials, and that's when we decided to sell it too at Grayscale Gorilla. Like we knew like this was a powerful tool. People wanted to learn it. People wanted to use it. And we're like, well, let's sell it. Let's do training. Let's, you know, start to introduce more people to this powerful plugin. And as we all started playing with it, I'll speak for me, there was a point in X Particles where I was like, okay, I get the modifier set up. I have an emitter. I can emit it in different ways. I can modify it in different ways. But then I saw this powerful section called like questions and answers, and the ability to make groups and that side of things. Yeah. And that's, at least for me, kind of like mentally where I was like, okay, this doesn't quite have the Cinema 4D like analogy that I could bring to it. What was your experience when you got to that point in X Particles, and how did you kind of mentally go through that process?
So it's questions and actions, and you're right. You get to a point, so you can do the emitter. You can imagine is like a generator, like a cloner or a matrix object or a fracture object, whatever, and then you can affect it or modify it. So that paradigm works completely. I think you're right. It's like you've got the two objects, one's affecting the other, one's modifying the emitter. And when you get to the point with the questions and actions, there's no equivalent in C4D. So what I did when I came across that is I avoided it. I'll be honest, when I first went to X Particles, I was like, oh, there's this questions and actions thing.
I don't have any questions.
I'm answering all my questions here with these like 50 modifiers. It's all cool. But then there's a point where you're like, okay, all right, okay, so let me sort of, I'm trying to solve a problem. And then I'm like, and then you're kind of sort of, okay, got this problem. How do I fix it or solve it? And I might have spoken to Mike. I might have spoken on a forum to someone. And that's mostly how I've always learned, by the way, if it's at the beginning, I'll get like a big general training thing. If it's if it's like to solve a specific problem, you jump on a forum and ask, or Slack, which is amazing now for me. And basically, the job required, I can't remember, it was something like just kill the particles at a certain age. And then and you could say, oh, just give them a life, but it was actually, it's not as simple as that always. Sometimes you emit them 10 frames in, and then they have to exist for 20 frames from the point of their birth, but whatever. So then I started to look into the questions and actions, and it actually, you start to realize how powerful that side of things is. So you, the basics are, you question a particle, you say, how old are you? If you're above 10 frames, or if you're above 20 frames old in age, end your life. That sounds pretty depressing, but
wow, this just got really general, John. Too many questions.
Yeah. So you ask the question of,
do I want to live?
How long do I want to live? No, but the basics is that you ask the question of the particle. How old are you? Do you meet this criteria? How far have you moved? All that kind of stuff, and then do an action, or activate a modifier, and then. It's kind of a bit abstract to think about it before you get into it. But when you start to do it, as soon as you've done one, I promise you, you'll start to go, oh, okay, I get this now. This makes total sense to me. And then you get sub questions. So then you can have it has to match both. So the particle has to be a certain age and a certain radius, then do the action. Otherwise, do nothing. And yeah, there's not many there in C4D, unless you're digging into Espresso, there's a condition operator, but there's not much equivalent to that in
yeah, that was one of the things core C4D. When I started learning X particles, and well, honestly, it's mostly because of John and the training and stuff, and what I've been like watching them as he's been sending them and I've learned a lot, and the questions and answers to me is really important, because I came from pflow, which is like the 3ds Max particle thing, and that has test operators, and those test operators are really crucial to getting directable particles. Because I mean, yeah, you could throw particles anywhere and like have it do some abstract stuff, and you just capture it, and hey, there's my particles. But when you really have a defined direction that your client or somebody has, the only way that you can truly control them is with operators like that, where you can say, well, you know, if it hits this, I want it to do this. If it is this old and is this going this fast, then it's going to become that. And if you don't have that sort of control, then it's not really something you can really use in production, because you're going to get those jobs where somebody's going to want, you know, when that drop hits the ground, it needs to splash up, and okay, well then what happens? And if you don't have that questions and answers or that sort of workflow, then you're kind of screwed.
Exactly. And well, that kind of sorry.
Oh no, I'm sorry. We've mentioned the training a couple times. I don't think we've spelled it out. John's here, not only because he's great at this stuff, but also because he helped us build a training for X particles that's coming out this week. And so we've kind of hinted at it a little bit. And I think we talked about it last week on the podcast, but just because all these things are popping up in this discussion, I wanted to make it clear, I've run into the same problem. A lot of us run into the same problem. When I talk to other people that use X particles, they like X particles, they get to that certain level and they're like, well, I know how to add turbulence and make it look awesome, and I know how to texture it, and I know how to do this, but I don't quite know that next step. I wish there was a way to like really learn a robust version of X particles. And that's why we brought John here to Grayscale Gorilla to make what we think is the most robust X particles training series ever made. And so we're here to talk about that for sure. We'll fill you in on that, but it's called Gorilla. I almost called it Gorilla Great. I almost messed it up. We have a new word.
This is our big moment.
This is our big moment. Chad, you had
all right. Let me help you out.
Help me out here. So, I can't even do it.
It's okay. I got you. So I'm so excited about this. It's called Gorilla Guide to X Particles with John Bosley, and I couldn't think of anybody that I'd rather have teach this course after having met John at NAB, and after we met. We spent like the whole day together. I feel like we hung out like all day. And John doesn't really know this, but I was secretly vetting him to see whether or not he was going to work out for this. Of course he was. I mean, he was already teaching people X particles through the Insidium booth and all these other different means. He's actually on our Slack channel, like an MVP. Like, I swear to God, he answers more questions on there than we do sometimes. So it was kind of a natural fit to have him put together this amazing training. And, you know, I think it's important to let people know the difference between what John is doing in the Gorilla Guide Dex Particles and what, you know, what's different about this training, I think, is that John, why don't you talk about it? Like, what makes this training different in your opinion? I mean, you're the one who's the X Particles expert here.
I think one of the big things is that we've got two sort of separate sections of the training. We've got the main project training, the project based, where you actually do something a bit more kind of real world, where you build a rig for X particles that you could then transfer into a project. You know, you could have like a rain setup or a snow setup. We've got those creepy crawly ones, which is kind of fun. Yeah, that's kind of fun one.
And I just like hearing you say creepy crawly too. It's just kind of so charming. Yeah. So charming.
Harry Potter style. Yeah.
Derailing John. That's fine. I love his voice so much.
I derail myself, don't worry. There's the projects, and there's like FUI stuff, future user interface stuff. There's, you know, there's all that. And then you've got scene files of those things as well, so you can kind of jump to the end if you really wanted. But you know, I think there's value in watching them through. The point is you can kind of pick and choose where you start as well. I would recommend going through those projects from start, from 01 down to I think there's 7, and then basically that just means there is a progression there where it does get it, like the first one is rain, and that's a great way to kind of just get into a particle setup. And I throw a few little sort of interesting things in that one straight from the off that I just wanted to get into people's heads at the beginning, like data mapping. Sounds scary, but super powerful and useful. Then there's this appendix section, which is just me nerding out on most parts of X particles, I would say, and just trying talking over them, what they're about, sort of some little lesser known things about them. And that's a much more dip in and dip out side of the training, but it's a lot, you know, there's a decent amount of training to kind of jump in and out of, I hope.
Well, and I joked about the name, but we thought a lot about what this would be called, because calling it training doesn't really do it justice. And so that's why, you know, we started thinking about what this is, and we came up with this idea that it's the Gorilla Guide. And to me, what was unique about it was that it's kind of like a choose your own adventure training. It's not just watch the first one and the second one and the third one. You kind of speak to both sides, at least from what we hear from our customers. People learn in different ways. That's obvious. But what you bring to the table is one way to learn, which is kind of this Lego piece way, which is going through each individual unit and show exactly what it does. And I know a lot of people learn that way. And there's also a group of people that learn by doing a project and saying, okay, I need to see how things fit together with a final goal in mind before I go back and see what each individual Lego piece does. And what's great about your training is that it does both. You can kind of choose to go jump between a project and then say, okay, I want to dive deeper into the emitter. Well, now you can go into that guide and jump into the emitter and learn all about it, and then jump back out and continue learning a project-based way. At least that's what I find really unique about the way that this is set up. And it's answering the question all the time where people are like, I get that first level. How do I go past? Thank you, man. It's been really cool to see the videos come in and learn. And like I said, when I met you, it's like, well, he's got an awesome accent, first of all. That's great. But then he knows what he's doing. He makes beautiful work, and he's a good teacher.
My jobs.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, that's the killer combo. When you know what you're doing, but you're also a good teacher. And that's more rare than it sounds. You know, there's a lot of people that are good at their job, that are good at what they do. And when asked how they do it, they can just be like, you know, I just do it. That's what I do. And I love the way that you jump in and not only show project based, but also, you know, bit by bit what all these pieces do. So I'm excited to share it with everybody, and just wanted to thank you too while you're here on the podcast for making this, man.
Well, thank you. So much appreciated. Yeah.
So you know, you've been working it sounds like in the industry for over 10 years now, right?
Yes. So So I was doing the visualization stuff. I left uni, I think around 2007. I did about 3 years in that other place. But whilst I was doing that, I was progressing into more sort of advertising and things like that on the side. So or as weekends and evenings, you know, that kind of thing. And then from that point, I've just progressed. And then I actually got kind of lucky. I work a lot with a small studio in Milwaukee, which is actually not crazy far away from you guys. Blend Studios, I'm sure you guys have probably, they've probably been to events and stuff like that. And
I was just in Milwaukee yesterday.
Oh, wow.
I'm not even joking. I was there shooting textures and what was the name of the studio you said? Blend?
Blend Studios. Yeah. They're a small shop, but they do some lots of cool sort of commercials and I do a lot of visualization stuff is still somewhat in my soul, because the whole architecture thing helped me so much in the sense that I work at scale for photorealism stuff. I work at scale. I kind of started to understand how to photograph things and just how to compose images and things like that. And that helps me do visualization stuff. And then on top of that, I can do the VFX stuff as well. So it's kind of like I end up doing a balance. But yeah, I get a nice variation. The first job I did with those guys was actually a tire burnout on a car. So yeah, that was TFD actually. So yeah,
nice.
Can you talk about that photography and composition and that angle? It's something we've brought up on the podcast before, and I think it's always an interesting conversation to learn how you learn composition and how to make things look good and get people's attention. I think there's there's always something we miss when we talk about all the technology and all the computers and all the stuff behind it, that ultimately in motion design, our goal is to grab the viewer's attention and to tell them something, whether it's what station they're watching, that there's a sale going on, that there's a new product they should check out. So how did photography feed that learning about composition for you?
To start with, it was quite, the first thing I did in ArcViz would have been just put a model and just put a camera somewhere near it and do some stupid kind of camera move, or if it was a walkthrough or a fly through, you just think about getting everything in the shot. You don't think about what you're trying to say. You just put everything in frame and you're like, oh, because everyone wants to see the whole thing, so I'm going to go above. You end up with just like an aerial view or something really uninspiring like that. What I started to find is that I think actually the trigger point was probably when I saw Third and the Seventh. You guys must have seen that movie.
That thing's awesome.
Mind-blowing. That's 2007 or something. And, you know, that guy's legendary now. But that's when I really realized that there was this... It was to really level up, you need to understand the photography and the real world side of things. So I basically started to think about that. And then also I'm good friends with a guy who his career was sort of animation and then Framestore, and he's also a filmmaker. So I got some great tips off him. I've even got one of his cameras that I've never given back. he upgraded and donated it to me nicely. But from him, I also learned from him how to sort of, you know, he was experimenting as well. We were all learning at the same time. So we'd learn about lighting. We'd learn about the how to kind of make sure that you're bringing the thing you're trying to sell to people in the front of camera. You know, it's the thing that draws your eyes to it. So things like long lenses versus short, you know, flattening an image out versus, you know, having the product massive in your view. It depends if you're trying to make it big or if you're trying to make it look fall away into the background, that kind of thing. And then as soon as you start putting that into 3D, into C4D and things, you start to realize that it's actually, it translates almost one-to-one. But you have the freedom to experiment way quicker in 3D and iterate and change. But yeah, so that's kind of where I see it. You can all of that applies. So, and you know, all of that applies to 3D, and then vice versa. Even I learned what I like to see, you know, rule of thirds, using a sort of a golden section, sort of the Fibonacci sequence, you know, that kind of nerdy thing. Like on the, and that helped me kind of frame sort of the stuff we were filming as well. If I ever helped on set, that is. But yeah. So yeah,
third and seventh, man, that was when that came out.
Blew my mind.
Like I was watching what he was doing and Joseph Kaczynski, and they both kind of came out of that visualization world, but they had this, they had a really great sense of space, and they have a, they had a really good eye for composition. And I think what was unique about third and seventh, and it inspired me a lot actually, was to take a really practical approach to 3D. In both the way that you move the camera, the way you frame a shot, the way you light the shot. I loved it because it was like the anti-3D. It was, all right, let's think about this like filmmakers. Let's think about this like we're really there on the day. What time is it? When are we going to have the best light? What are we doing with the camera? Is it on a slider? Is it on a dolly? And really think about it in a cinematic way. And I mean, if you can approach things that way in 3D, the way that he did, you, your stuff becomes timeless in a way. I mean, obviously the subject matter of what he was, what he put into that film was already gorgeous and timeless anyway, but he used techniques that weren't going to date it in 10 years. So you can watch that right now. And it's still
good right now.
Yeah. It still is good.
I remember a Pixar behind the scenes was talking about that, and they were talking about how they wanted every lock off or every camera to be a practical camera. And they would talk about that. And I thought that was so insightful to hear at the time, for me anyway, because as a new 3D person into Cinema 4D and all this stuff, my instinct was to fly the camera everywhere and just be like, I want to spin around. I can spin around. So I'm gonna fly here. I'm gonna move here. And then I saw like the best 3D filmmakers say, nope, they're going to be lock off cameras, or they're going to be like a dolly shot. Like everything that we're going to do in this movie could have been done in the 40s with, you know, camera technology from the 40s. And we're going to translate that into 3D. And yeah, that language, that timeless language, is that was a huge help for me. Let's see. And now I just want to watch the third and the seventh again.
I know. Yeah. I'm watching it now, actually. So.
The texturing in there is so great too. Like it's just really well done. Really well done. But I wanted to ask John, like in terms of particle effects and that part of 3D and the things that we find ourselves doing, are there any particle, any films, anything that you've seen done with particles that you're just like, wow, that's some next level stuff?
Something I saw recently really blew my mind, and that was Doctor Strange. That just had so much cool particle work. It had cool 3D in general. Actually, linking into that whole camera thing about selling, if you start to throw the camera around, it starts to become unrealistic. Well, how do you balance that with flying through dimensions in space-time and stuff like that and still sell it? That's where it's like, wow, okay, these guys know what they're doing. they've somehow found that balance. And I think a lot of it is iterating and trying new things, but that one had, even from the simple stuff, like the opening the portal, it would have like a like sparks flying off it. I think I did that when I got home. I kind of like,
you did that.
I do with loads of films. I do this with loads of films. And I sometimes save them sometimes. Sometimes I'm just like, oh yeah, that's totally doable. I should do a project on that, or I should do
Totally do a tutorial on the Doctor Strange, like particle.
The lasso as well. He has a lasso thing that he kind of uses. Has one.
Yeah, they all. I think they all. A lot of he uses it a lot. I think there's other people that have it too. But I would love to know how to do that thing in X Particles. That'd be fun.
It's pretty straightforward, actually. I like that's the beauty of it. When you actually start to peel back those layers, and you're like, oh, okay, like. But there's the thing is when you've got a reference as good as that, it helps a lot, right? Sometimes it's harder, way harder coming up with the idea in the first place. So, but yeah, absolutely. I love that effect. And even the stuff, there's some really creepy stuff. Well, when they go through into the different dimensions, you've got like, I'm not going to spoil or anything, but just plumes of kind of bioluminescent particles and kind of weird stuff like that. It's so cool. And yeah,
when you watch that stuff, as someone who has a pretty deep understanding of particles, do you immediately in your head start like deconstructing it? Like, oh, first I would put, you know, I would use an object emitter, and then I would have a question. And
well,
like,
yeah, how much is it ruining the movie for you?
I'm really good. I'm really good at disconnecting that stuff, or at least thinking about it afterwards. Although sometimes it does kind of go, you do go. It depends if it's good or bad, actually. If it's a bad effect, I'll be like, yeah, they should have done such and such. But I try not to do that because I'm not a filmmaker. But the ones where they're really amazing, I do think kind of, I do feel like I've been doing it long enough that I can recognize what they're doing or how they're doing it, at least to a point. It's always that finishing touches thing that really kind of, you know, sells the shot, I think. But the sure. Yeah. I can disconnect myself, luckily, so I can just watch and enjoy a movie. But if it's so bad that it takes me out, that's the movie's fault. And
absolutely, it's the particle guy's fault. Didn't
yeah, poor guy probably had like one day to do the whole thing or something. So I sympathize. I'm not like I don't. Yeah, I just passingly judge.
So I'm always interested too. You know, you've been teaching and you've been also playing with X particles for this long, and mm-hmm. you've been at the booth and showing people all this stuff. Yeah. What's one of those things that you wish more people knew about what X particles could do? What's something that you're like, if they just learn more about this one bit, that'll really start opening the door?
I would say data mapping. It's so nerdy sounding, and like it puts people off a little bit, and it was only added in 3.5, I think. But the whole concept, it's similar to questions and actions, right? In fact, it can actually replace quite a lot of the questions and actions stuff, which is actually why in the very first tutorial, I actually sneak it into one of the modifiers, because I was like, I'm going to introduce people to this so that they know it's there. At least they know it's there, and try and explain it the best I could, because that's sometimes these abstract ideas are really hard to explain to people without demonstrating. So that's why it's great. That's why you do training, right? That's why you get these little nuggets of information here and there. But data mapping essentially allows you to say do the age. So you have a graph. It's you have a curve in the UI, and basically one axis is going to drive a parameter in the modifier. Say it's like strength of turbulence. So it's going to churn your particles up way more the higher up the curve it goes. And then along the horizontal axis, it would be the age, for instance. So you could just say maximum of 90 frames. And then if you draw a line, obviously the older the particle gets, the more turbulence applies to it. And I mean, it sounds pretty scary and stuff, but it's like the questions and actions as soon as you jump and do that. But that is a huge thing.
And you can as you could pretty much put anything on that graph, right? Like you could graph.
Yeah.
Lots of different things. And then like what give us like if you wanted to go further with it, could you actually start feeding data maps into other data maps?
Well, it depends. So it's all about so it's about what the data comes in and what comes out the other end of that modifier, for instance. So you can kind of do that, and you can layer them up. Essentially, what you could do is you could say change the radius over time, and that's like in a XP scale modifier. All it does is it just scale is the vertical axis, and then age along the horizontal moves along as the age goes on, the radius goes up. Then you could add another map, which says look at the radius of the particle, and then that becomes like a nested iterating thing that it will look at that new particle radius that's got bigger and change the color.
So, for instance, like as that radius, so you've mapped the radius of that particle over its age, and then you might have different data map that says, well, as that gets bigger, I want it to turn green.
Yeah,
or
right.
something.
That's a simple
like that.
Example of that. Yeah, I'm trying to use simple examples but you can do some insanely complex and brilliant stuff with this. You just see the guys, you know, that do this all day, every day. They, you know, you've spawning based on age and stuff like that, it's better with a question and action setup. So, but the number of particles that get spawned, that can be data mapped. So, you know, you could just like, as time goes on, even just use the scene time, as time goes on, the number of particles increases, but you can then use a question and action to set that that modifier off. So you could just say spawn when it's 10 frames old.
How do you keep all that straight, man? Because one of the things that I love watching you work is like really kind of it inspired me to kind of take my X particles and try to be more, I guess, buttoned up about it. How do you keep, once you start building up these complex systems, how do you keep it all straight?
So that's another beautiful thing that they have. Nice setup there, Chad.
I do this for a living. So.
Basically, there's this thing called the XP system object, and it's where it's like your starter kit for X particles. You add it to your scene, and really, if you think about it, it's just a glorified null with a bunch of nulls inside it, but they've got nice icons, so it looks like a folder structure. And then in each of those systems, so you have a system for each kind of cool thing that goes on in your scene, you've got an emitters null, you've got a dynamics null, a modifiers null, and you just keep all of those things in there, and it basically just allows you to just immediately know, okay, I need to edit something in the emitter, because you're right, without that, it could get incredibly overwhelming. Like, you know, if you've got sort of 20 modifiers and some of them don't affect one emitter, yeah, you're not gonna get that.
That's usually my problem. Like, I'll start messing around in X particles, and I'll be like, "Oh, this is cool," and then I'll, you know, go to lunch or something, and I'll come back and I'll look at it like, "What the hell was I doing? Like, what? I don't even know what I'm making right now." But I can open up, like, I've opened up a lot of your finished projects from the training product because you have like, so for those of you out there, if you get the training. You get a starter scene and an end scene. So you can kind of, like John was saying earlier, you can kind of walk through his process. But I was opening up your end scenes, and the way that, you know, you're really good about keeping it organized. And I think that's really key to anybody using X particles, mm-hmm. even if you don't get the training. Using that system that you've got going, it's the only way I think you could open up a project a year later and like figure out what the hell you were doing.
Oh yeah, you definitely want to keep it organized, especially if you're working in a pipeline with a team. It's the same thing it's the same in everything, right? If you give someone a Photoshop file with no named layers and 100 layers, they're going to hate you forever.
but you think about something, I mean, I guess the one that most people are going to run into is MoGraph and piling up some emitters, some effectors. But yeah, you know, that's pretty simple to keep grouped up. In X particles, almost immediately you're creating emitter, and then you set some conditions so that emitter creates more emitters. But now some other effect is applying to one, but not the other, and you immediately get lost with these things layering up and being related to each other. And maybe one effector is affecting multiple emitters, and so I'm lost. Can't possibly looking at that again, even an hour later, and you're like, "Ooh, I've lost it."
Totally. So that is on, I guess, the artist to kind of be really careful when they're building it. But this whole system object and subfolders that you can have in that, you can create your own custom subfolders as well and give them their own icon if you really want. So it is really does help to keep that organized. But you know, look, everyone has their own ways of working. So I'd like an overview. Like, this is where going back to the whole nodes thing in the ideal life is that you'd have an overview of nodes. But that's a totally different pie in the sky idea, right? But
I would love to see nodes in X particles.
We love nodes. I'm one who loves nodes, but I know Mike Batchelor who came up with X particles. He doesn't like that workflow. He just prefers the straight up simple C4D object stack. And I think that's why we've ended up with X particles. So I'm happy right now that even exists because of that reason. So. Everyone prefers has their own way of doing things.
To elaborate what you mean, wasn't it that he hated the thinking particles like espresso node setup? He's like, "This is crazy. I want to see objects."
Yeah. Similar to what you said earlier, is that if you want to do one simple thing, sometimes it takes several nodes and several different kind of connections and combinations of those things. He just wanted it to feel like C4D, where you add an object, add a modifier. And I mean, the basic C4D has that basic emitter still in existence. If you go into the menus into simulation or whatever it is, and there's still that standard emitter and that standard modifiers. Yeah. So technically that that does exist somewhere, but it's just very limited. Whereas this, yeah, X particles is, yeah, avoided the node thing. But yeah, he did hate. Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's why, I think that's why X particles to me was felt the way it did. It did feel like cinema because it had that mentality, and it does give you the ability to build ideas quickly. And I I think we're all saying a similar thing, which is any tool that allows you to snap pieces together very quickly is going to have a little bit more complexity down the road because of that. And I think, you know, Cinema 4D does a great job in making it really easy to get started. And then when you want to be more complex, the tools are there, but you have to go open up and find them. And I think that's where everybody, or at least I'll speak for myself and people that contact us, that's where a lot of people are with X particles. They're like, awesome, so easy to get up and started and running and get things moving and get things, you know, spitting out of my object and moving around. But then how do I start to peel open the layers of what this can do? I feel like we all know it's very powerful, but we're a little timid to go jump into that pool. Yeah. And so when I saw you and all of your crazy stuff out there and it was organized, I'm like, all right, we need to talk to this guy. And I know we're wrapping up here a little bit, but you know, if you guys are listening, you want to check this out, we're literally launching it. It should be up by the time this podcast goes out. So if you're interested in, you know, jumping in deeper to X particles, learning more than just what emitters and, you know, simple modifiers can do, that's why we built it. We hear this all the time from our customers. You know, we get that it's powerful. We get that it can do these basic things really well, but how do I dig deeper into it? And like I said, what's really cool about this training and the reason it's called the Gorilla Guide and not just some training is because you have those projects, you have really cool snow and rain and some stuff to get started, but then also some really advanced projects. You have some, you know, build on effects and some swarming and all that stuff. But then you also break down each individual video, which I thought was a unique way to look at it, kind of get both sides. So if you're out there listening, please go check it out. We're always excited to have more teachers come here to Grayscale Gorilla. And we're always on the lookout for good teachers that know what they're doing, that are entertaining. I mean, you get the voice alone. That's entertainment enough right there.
Sold.
Sold. You like that voice?
It's almost like, yeah, you guys cheat. You have like the superpower where you automatically sound smart to all Americans just by having any sort of British accent at all.
Yeah, I imagine we have the exact opposite effect on them.
No.
We all sound like country bumpkins.
Oh, no. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, right.
That's just being polite now.
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah, and so I just wanted to thank you again. And man, we got to have you on the podcast more. This is great. It's the time works out. What time is it over there for you?
It's 4 in the morning. No, I'm just kidding. It's 7 in the evening. So
okay.
Yeah. Food time soon.
We might have to call you up, get you on live a couple more times, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's fun. I'm really good at
it. Yeah, and you know, just to wrap up, definitely go check out the training. We're really excited to have John help us build it's the most robust X particles training that that we've seen, and it's by somebody that does this really, really well. And I should say too, it's we keep talking about that next level of what X particles can do. But if any of you out there are new to X particles and you want to get started like right away, it's designed for that as well. It's designed to kind of ramp you up very quickly into X particles so that we could start to talk about the more complex stuff. So whether you been using it for years and you want to open up that door into, you know, data mapping and questions and actions, or you just got it and you want to like get up and running, that's why we called it the Gorilla Guide. It's no matter where you are in your learning phase, there's something in this training that'll get you into that next level. So I really appreciate how much time and effort you put into this, John. We're excited to share it with everybody, to get it out there. If you want to learn more about it, please go check it out over at grayscalegorilla.com. And is there anything else? This is the part of the podcast where we all take turns. We go in a circle and we say, is there anything else about this week that we want to talk about? And then I usually come up with a bad analogy, and then we wrap up. Does that sound about right, guys?
That's what that sounds about right.
Yeah, we didn't get an analogy, or did we? We probably had several, and I've just become immune to them.
You just blocked them out.
I just they just happen all the time. So,
John, what do you? You mentioned you were learning all that stuff back then. Do you remember watching any Grayscale Gorilla tutorials? Because I always like what's your first?
Your
first Grayscale Gorilla tutorial, and how annoying what was I?
Oh, you're just a trait. No, I'm just kidding. You were fine. I'm trying to think of which one it was, but there was one which helped me with the camera stuff. It was like a depth of field thing. And that's actually when I kind of discovered you. I had the internet, all right? I wasn't that bad, but I kind of just stuck to one sort of forum and one sort of thing. And then when I discovered there was this whole sort of free set of training, I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, I did. Not to kind of inflate your ego, but it was important.
I needed a little ego boost, which is why I asked.
You taught me everything I know, Nick. So.
Oh boy, here we go.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, not true. Not true. Go ahead.
You were part of the mix, shall I say that? As a huge, like a broad mix of stuff that I do. I just generally my way of learning is varied, but yeah, if I'm looking for a specific tutorial and things, you guys would always pop up top of the YouTube list. So I'd have to kind of filter it out to actually get to the other stuff. No, I'm just kidding.
Sam, I'm sick of seeing these guys.
Sorry, I'm just trying. I'm messing.
Well, on the last podcast, we talked a lot about how you learn and what your, you know, where you get your early information. So it's always to me, it's interesting where people find, you know, us and where Grayscale Gorilla pops up. That's our job. That's our goal, is to help people no matter where they are in their motion design career. So I always ask, just because that's a selfish question from me, but it's also why we bring people like you here to help continue this going, like to keep teaching and to keep training and to keep helping people that want to do this, that want to learn fast and make cooler looking stuff. So I appreciate you joining us, man. It's awesome to have you.
Yeah, great to be here.
Thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this was fun. We got to talk more Legos later.
Oh, yeah.
Legos. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks again, guys. And if there's nothing else, I really appreciate it. Thanks again, John. And we'll see you and everybody listening in another Grayscale Gorilla podcast very soon. Bye, everybody. This is where we all wave.
Gotta wave.
I already knew.